Don't mind me. Just oh my goodness, that was beautiful. Mm. Wow, I don't really think I need to add anything to Hugh's reading and Ray's song. Goodness, wow. But I'll find a way, I'm sure. So it's funny. Last week, I experienced it when I was speaking last week, the groaniest congregation ever. So I was speaking about forgiveness, and people kept groaning. I don't know why. I would have thought we would have all gotten that down pat by now, but perhaps not. Anyway, you know, I'm not done with forgiveness yet. I think I still have a few more things to learn about it, so I'm speaking about forgiveness, among other things, truth, today as well. So last week when I was speaking about forgiveness, and all y'all were groaning your little heads off, I mentioned that our home is like the Lord of the Flies, where I live with my husband. And the reason that I said that, I thought I'd go into that a little bit more explicitly, is that somebody's often trying to reproduce there or engage in unauthorized eating. And these are my animals I'm talking about, not so much me and you. But, you know, last week I went to the vet three times, and it was all for those things I just mentioned, unauthorized eating and the attempt to reproduce that didn't turn out very well. And my cat, Molly, she's got a thyroid problem, and so the killer instinct has come up in her really strong. So every day she gives us a present. And every day I step on it, a dead rat or something like that. But the other day, her crowning achievement was to leave a headless bird on the kitchen counter. It was very special. See, okay, groaning, good, I like that. I like inspired groaning. Now, I'm talking about mostly the animals we have on purpose, but there are a few that we don't have on purpose. Have you guys ever seen that movie Solo, the Free Solo, where the mountain climber climbs up the face of, I know, it's scary. It's a great movie, though, you got to see it. There's a mountain climber that climbs up the face of El Capitan without any ropes. And I swear to you, we have a rat that can climb up the top of the refrigerator and take a bite out of every banana that's up there. And he also comes up and he climbs up on the kitchen table and he takes a bite out of everything in the fruit bowl. So last week I actually caught the rat in a humane trap. And that was part of my to-do list for Monday. I brought him to release him. I brought him to Ojai. Sorry. It's moving up in the world, and so I came home from that, and there was a package on the front porch, and it said that it was fragile and it had something living in it. So it was from Federal Express. So I opened it up, and it was a box of frogs. A box of frogs. It had polywogs. Hugh had ordered some frogs, and I'd forgotten that he did. And then it's every girl's dream, right? A box of frogs. And then he came home from where he was, and he went into our aviary to see what was going on in there, and he realized that he had forgotten to take the eggs out, and we had 5 new baby birds. That's 15. Lord of the Flies is what I'm saying, people. That's what is going on. And I guess the last event was yesterday morning when some animal threw up on the kitchen floor, and our dog, Bartok, decided that he was afraid of it and he couldn't go out the doggy door. So he's walking by the throw-up like this. And I think he was actually ashamed. I think he thought that he had done it and that I was going to be upset with him. So all of that, this talk is about the truth beyond the facts. And if you look at the facts of our life together, it looks like we have a dirty, smelly, chaotic house. And, well, we do. Those are the facts. But the truth about our house is that it's paradise. It's paradise to me. I wouldn't trade any of those animals for anything. I love all of them. Even the little rat that I took to Ojai. I love all of them so much. And I wonder if there's a metaphor here for all of us, for let's anthropomorphize God for just a moment and think about God deciding to make a world, or if you choose, awareness deciding to make a world. And it's kind of messy, and it's kind of smelly, and people mess up, and people do bad things, and people do good things. But I wonder if it's really paradise, if the truth beyond the facts of the messiness of life is that life is paradise, and that there is a benevolent creator that is perfect, pure awareness, that absolutely is in love with all of us, completely in love with all of us, and completely in love with creation. Doesn't that sound lovely? And what if it's true? I don't know that I can prove it other than living like the truth is true, and then it tends to prove itself through me. So that's my hope for us today. My prayer for us today is that we do the work of seeing the truth, the spiritual truth behind all of the facts that we may be holding in our minds. Ernest Holmes said that spiritual truth dissolves solid facts, the facts that we make so solid. And that's why I chose that reading for Hugh to read today about Monet refusing his operation. That's actually based on a true story where Monet had cataracts, and it was his goal in life to paint light. And when his doctor said he wanted to repair the cataracts, Monet said, "No, thank you. I like seeing the world with blurred edges because that seems more like reality. That seems more like the reality that I want to hold in my heart." So where in your life are you perhaps putting the facts above the truth, where really the truth could be above the facts? And where do you perhaps want to soften your perception a bit to see the lines of continuity and blur that tell us that everything is interconnected? Because that's the truth above anything that we might think about ourselves, or think about another person, or think about the world, or think about the creation, think about the creator. That's the truth, is that we are all interconnected. All of us interconnected in this divine web that we call existence. As I mentioned last week, I spoke about forgiveness. And somebody at the back of the church asked me a question about forgiveness. Now, what you all should know is that when you speak to me at the back of the church, I hardly ever remember what you said because I'm still in, like, you know, whatever, download, spiritual download mode. But I did actually remember this question because the person asked me about, what about being forgiven by God? Does God need to forgive us? Has anybody been raised in a traditional religious path? Many of you, okay. And has anybody been raised in a path where they may have told you that you were a sinner and that God needed to forgive you? You don't, okay, I was going to say you don't have to raise your hands. Somebody up back there has two hands up. And somebody back there has two hands and a leg up. Yeah. So, you know, I reread the Fall from Grace story the other day, the Genesis, the Fall from Grace, where Adam and Eve mess up and they eat from the tree of knowledge of good and evil, and God, you know, this God, this creation, this creator that has galaxies and billions of stars and a whole world happens to be looking down and sees, oh, crap, look at that. They ate the apple in this little tiny spot in wherever, Mesopotamia. That's what we were talking about this morning. In Mesopotamia, they've eaten this little tiny apple, and then it gets totally pissed off, right? I whispered that so I didn't have to say it in church, right? Gets totally upset. Does that seem unrealistic to you? Richard Rohr talks about, Richard Rohr is a Franciscan mystic, and he talks about how original sin, which is, that's the story of original sin, where they ate from the tree of knowledge of good and evil, tempted by a serpent. He talks about how original sin should be called, or could be called, original shame. Because he said in 50 or so years of ministry, pretty much everybody that he speaks to is carrying some type of shame, some type of reason why they feel that they are somehow not good enough, or that they're unworthy, or that they're dirty, or that they're flawed in some way, that they've been spoiled in some way, that they've been damaged, they think they're damaged goods. And he suggests that because of the way we seem to be made, I don't really know anybody who is shame-free, honestly, in all of the years that I've lived. It seems that we are made that way. It may have something to do with, you know, coming out of this comfortable place and being popped into a world that's traumatic, right? I mean, even the delivery room is traumatic, you know? I'd crawl back up in there, you know? But someday I'll learn to stop pointing. But it may have something to do with that, but it does seem like the entire human race is carrying shame. And it's not like we tend to take that shame and we project it onto everything. And we even project it onto God, so that the story of creation and the story of the fall from grace becomes a story about how horrible we are and how we should be ashamed. Richard Rohr points out that when Adam and Eve are hiding and God says to you, or God comes to speak with them, God is walking in the garden, it says in the book. And I know, it's so funny, right? to really anthropomorphize God, it cracks me up. But let me not just entertain myself up here. Let me just talk to everybody, okay? So God's walking in the garden, and he calls Adam, and Adam says, I'm here, I hid because we were naked. And God says, who told you you were naked? And he says that might actually be a loving thing. Who told you to be ashamed? Certainly not me. And then a little known verse in Genesis that he points out is that God actually clothed Adam and Eve in skin. He made garments out of skin for them. So it's almost as if Adam and Eve were pure light, pure paradise, pure unconditional knowing, and that they because of a necessary event that needed to happen in order to create the world, they had to know, have the knowledge of good and evil. They had to know duality. They had to know contrast, because you know that life needs contrast in order to be meaningful, right? When I say that my home is paradise, it's more paradise because of all the smells and the animals and all of the sounds and all of that stuff that bugs me. It's still that makes it more paradise somehow. It's like how sorrow makes joy more joyful. And so God clothes them in skin and sends them out into the world and says, do your best. But my hope for you is that you find your way back to the garden. You find your way back to paradise, because this is your birthright and this is who you really are. You see that? Do you see it for yourselves? That no matter what you've done, no matter where you've been, no matter who you are, your birthright is paradise. Your birthright is paradise, and you can have that. There is a good for you, and you are supposed to have it. I listened to Esther Hicks this morning, and she was talking about how, yes, in the energy of forgiveness, we have already been forgiven. Of course we have been forgiven. The vibration of forgiveness is within us, but we have not raised the vibration of, say, the separate self to be able to receive the energy of forgiveness, to be able to receive the energy of paradise. And that's our task, is to open ourselves and to be receptive to that paradise, to that state of forgiveness, to that truth that is beyond the facts of whatever we're telling ourselves about how unworthy we are, or how shameful we are, or how shameful the other person is, or how wrong they've been, or how wrong we are. Our job, our joy, is to raise our vibration so that we can realize and recognize and receive the truth beyond the facts. Last week I mentioned the Ho'oponopono prayer. One of our practitioners calls it the Ho'opono Ono prayer. It's, I love you, I'm sorry, please forgive me, thank you. And when I spoke last week, I mentioned, it seems odd, like if somebody has done me wrong, why am I asking them to forgive me? I did some more reading about that, and I read this one source that said that the Ho'oponopono prayer is actually, it's meant for all kinds of things, but one way to do it is to recite the prayer as if you are reciting it to God. The God of your childhood, the absolute reality that we teach about in this church that doesn't really have a face on it, but that is pure existence, that creates the world out of itself, out of awareness, the self-aware universe. Recite that prayer to Spirit. And so it would go something like, I love you, God. I love you, reality. I'm sorry, reality, that I didn't realize who I am. Please forgive me. I know you wanted to play through me in a big way, and I've gotten in the way in the past. But let's let that go now. And thank you. Thank you for incarnating as me, through me, in me. Thank you for giving me the obstacles that have brought me to this point in my life where I can realize this and where I can say this prayer to you. And then what happens? What I've observed in saying the prayer that way, and in saying it with enthusiasm and ecstasy, like I really mean it because I do, is that the higher self forgives the lower self, and then something even more special starts to happen, and that is that God, or the universe, or reality, absolute reality, it feels like it is saying the prayer back to me. So the prayer goes, I love you, Bonnie. I'm sorry, Bonnie, that you've been through all of this challenge. Please forgive me. I did it for you. I did it for your awakening. And thank you. Thank you for being a good sport most of the time. And that tends to flip reality on its end. That tends to open up something that is beyond our current understanding, but it's that place of peace and reconciliation, again, that is beyond the facts of wrongdoing. You know, I always talk about Rumi's field here, right? The ideas of wrongdoing and right doing, who's right, who's wrong, that there is a place where we meet in consciousness, that place of interconnectedness. And when the soul lies down in that grass, the world is too full to talk about. The facts don't even make any sense because the truth is so brilliant and so bright, that truth of interconnectedness that was in the reading. If you are anything like me, you will want to make exceptions for this. I would love to forgive everybody. I would love to see the truth beyond the facts that I'm perceiving about that person. But that person is too bad for me to do that. This situation was too unfair for me to do that. In my humble experience, and the lesson that I keep getting dragged to, kicking and screaming, is that when I don't want to forgive somebody, that's the person I need to forgive the most. So rather than me talk about that, Shelley Eller is going to show us how it's done. Let's give Shelley a welcome. I got this mic for you. There we go.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Many of you know that I was in a television show called Shark Tank, because I shared that story here several years ago. For those of you who weren't here who have no idea what the Shark Tank is, it's a reality TV show where an entrepreneur can seek an investment from five venture capitalists that they call sharks. And I was on the show in 2012 with my product called the Shono Towel. It's a bath towel, it's a beach towel, it's a cover-up, and it's a changing towel, all in one. And I have to say, I kicked ass. I did pretty good. Three of the sharks were fighting over me. One of them said, you know what, I think it's worth more than you're asking for, I'll give you more money. Whoa! One of them said, all right, I'll give you that same amount of money, but for less equity in your company. And the last one said, you know what, I like you so much that I'm actually going to give you exactly what you want, and I'm going to write you a check right now. She wrote me a check, ripped it out, handed it to me. I couldn't believe it. I could not believe it. It was a true miracle in my life, especially at a time when I needed it most. My husband and I had recently lost our home through the recession, and we were struggling financially. And here I am on this TV show that I didn't guide myself to. It fell in my lap. And here I am being handed a check for $50,000. But after that happened, I have to say that absolutely nothing worked out the way I thought it was going to. The very next day after I filmed that episode, my new shark partner called and she said, Shelley, I've been given a lot in my life, and now is my time to give back. I'm going to make your dreams come true. I'm going to do this for you. And I thought, oh, thank you. And she said, but don't cash that check that I gave you. Hold on to it for right now. I don't know how we want to set up the business, how we're going to structure things. I didn't think anything of it that made sense to me. And over the next few weeks, as we talked and we talked, my deal started twisting and turning and getting more and more contorted. And at the end, it didn't really look like anything that we'd agreed on when the cameras were rolling. And I was never able to cash that check, and I never received the investment. But at the same time, she was negotiating a deal with Disney Parks so that I could sell my towel into their water parks and maybe even on their cruise lines. So I thought, that's fine. Give me my Disney deal, we're good. And also, my Shark Tank episode hadn't even aired on TV yet. And I was certain that once that happened, my business was going to blow up. Life was going to be good, and I was going to be rolling. And then my episode finally aired to over 6 million people. And my product didn't sell very well. It didn't. I was devastated. And sure, you know, I brought in a couple thousand dollars that night, but I owed a couple thousand dollars just to get on TV. And I was so hurt and so broken and felt like such a failure. And I saw it happen over and over again. The money would come in and it would go out. It would come in and it would go out, and I could never hold on to it. But finally, a couple months later, my episode came out. We did a follow-up episode showing that we had made this Disney deal, and my family was flown to Florida, and we shook hands with the buyer, and I thought, okay, this is when it's going to happen. And I slept in a Mickey Mouse t-shirt for 3 months, and I knew it was my big moment. That's the truth. And that episode played, and it was a whole lot of nothing. I was told that my online sales weren't impressive, and although the 1,000 towels that they had ordered from me in their water park sold quite quickly, they never placed another order. And that was that. And after 1 year of all of this crap, I was broken. I was so devastated. I felt like the biggest failure. And also, I was angry. You know, I was really angry. I felt like the lotto winner that never got paid. It's like, what happened? God, you brought me this, and it looks like this? Really? But you know, it was that anger that kept me in that business for 3 more years, wanting to prove every single person wrong. And it wasn't until 2015, when I had banged my head against the wall one too many times, I realized I just had to let it go, and I threw in the towel. In 2014, my family and I moved to Ventura County, and that's when I started coming to our center here. In perfect timing, just when I needed it. And I showed up here pretty broken, in not such a great state. But I started listening to Bonnie, I started hearing the truth, and I started coming to classes, and Bonnie would say things like, is it right or is it wrong? What's the answer? And everyone would say, both, right? Yes. And at first I'm like, what? It's both? But then my heart started saying, both. Could there be a truth? Could there be a truth behind the facts of my failure? And I started doing the work, and I did a lot of work. I wish she was here today with Kim Bryson, who I love so deeply. And she told me one day, Shelley, you need a new pair of glasses, sister. You gotta start looking through a new lens. Gotta put on some new glasses. seeing it in another way. And so she gave me some glasses, and I started looking through my lens of truth and my lens of love. And you know, I started seeing it differently. So I decided to start applying that in my life. The first thing I looked at was this. Shark Tank failures. 10 products that didn't make it. Number 5, show no towels. Shelley Ehler crossed a towel with a poncho and got a patent for her creation. She licensed it to Legoland and Six Flags Magic Mountain. Ehler went on the show and walked away with a $50,000 check in partnership with Lori Grenier. Fake news. Fake news.
Oh, yeah.
But the partnership had a bitter end. So I looked at that and thought to myself, failure. I was a failure. Is it true? Byron Katie, is it true? Do you know that it's true? The facts say that it's true. I know that I never made any money with it. Isn't that a fact? My heart said, maybe. Shelley, you created something from nothing. You got this idea, and you believed it with everything in your heart, and you saw it through, and within a couple of years, your product was on the Today Show. It sold in Legoland, in Six Flags Magic Mountain, in SeaWorld, in Disneyland. It was on Good Morning America. It was on The View. You want to call yourself a failure? Be proud of yourself. That's true. And then I thought more. But I didn't sell any towels. I didn't. That had to be wrong. Shelley, you really think you were on Shark Tank to sell towels? You know that's not true. You were on Shark Tank to spread hope. And you did. You did to millions and millions of people. And that was true. After I aired on that show, I received thousands of emails from people around the country saying, I saw you last night and you give me hope. You give me hope. I am so proud of you and what you did and accomplishing what you did with what you had. And if you can do it, I know I can. God bless you. You inspire me. You want to call that wrong? No, that's true. But I never made any money. Are you sure that's true? Gosh, Shelley, how did you and your family survive all those years? I guess that's true. Shelley, try and think of a time when there was something you needed that you didn't have. Try and think of a time when money wasn't there for you. Yeah, that's true. And I would remember times when I would literally order thousands of dollars worth of towels with no money in my bank account. And it showed up in perfect time every time. Yeah, I guess it's true. But what about, you know, what about my shark partner? That was wrong. That was really wrong. She's been given a lot in her life, and now's her time to give back. What about that? Come on. When she told you that, do you think she meant it? Yeah, I do. I do think she meant it. When she told you she was going to make your dreams come true, do you think she meant it? I do. I do. Do you think that she wanted you to fail? Do you think that she meant you harm? Was that her intention? No. Do you think that maybe after she had time to look at the product and evaluate it and send it overseas for evaluation, and get pricing on it and realize that it was going to cost a lot more money than any of you thought to produce, and that there's only so much you can ask for it, and there wasn't a profit margin that made it a viable product. Do you think that maybe that's why you didn't get the investment? Do you think that maybe she's a total bad person? Or do you think she's a really smart businesswoman? And shrewd business people, sharks, make good investments that are going to return to them. Do you think that could be true? I guess so. Wow. My new lenses were working. Brought me to a place of peace and acceptance, which is really wonderful. And then a crazy thing happens. Last year, all of a sudden I start to hear this whisper that starts to say, Shelly, remember me. Shelly, I'm here. I'm like, no, go away. I hate you. Shelly, you love me. We could be friends again. No. But what I know is that when those whispers get louder, you got to start listening and you have to pay attention. And what I know for sure is that when I closed my business, I did so knowing that there was one avenue that I didn't explore. And that was this. When I aired on Shark Tank, something unexpected happened. I hadn't thought of. I started getting emails from people saying, this is the most amazing product for my child with a disability. I have a child, and it's very difficult to bathe her, and we have to line her wheelchair with towels. And now I can take my child and her bathing chair and stick your towel over her and lift her up and put her in her wheelchair, and it's been life-changing. And people started getting photos of children and my towels, and my heart just opened in a really incredible way. One woman wrote and she said, I have a 21-year-old son. And she said, he has cerebral palsy. She said, do you by chance make a big one? Because I could really use this to help bathe him. And I wrote her back and I said, you know, I don't, but I'll make one for you. I will. And I did, and I sent it to her. And she wrote me back and she said, bless you, you gave my son his dignity. And so as a voice comes back to whisper, it goes, you know what we're supposed to do. Well, I made a big towel. But it came back with a different purpose, see. It came back with a purpose to assist those who need assistance and wrap them in love. In this February, I did my very first trade show in this space. It was called the Abilities Expo in Los Angeles. And I was so thrilled to see what a perfect fit it was in this space. The people that came. The people that came and told me how much my product would make their lives easier over and over and over again. It was beautiful. And I had this incredible moment where I realized I wasn't there to sell. I was there to serve. Yeah. And then it's like all these lessons, all the teachings all came together and I was like, yes, this is it. I made it. And so, you know, now I'm at a point, I don't know where this is going to go. You know, Reverend Bonnie asked me the other day, how's your towel business going? I was like, it's not really going anywhere. I haven't been working on it because I have a lot of other things to do. But you know what I'm so grateful for? I'm no longer attached to it. I don't have to have it look a certain way. It can just be how it is, and God's a CEO, and we're just going to let it happen and flow, and whatever unfolds, unfolds, right? Mm-hmm. And so I'm so thankful for that. So I ask you today, knowing what I've shared with you, was it a success or was it a failure? Both, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Right? Right? There was a greater truth beyond the facts, and that greater truth put me back together.